This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us
Anne Weir,
Alison Malden,
Diane McConnell,
Mike Lawrence,
and I'm Stuart Burks.
Okay, Mike, you've got some photos of Wellington from about 1910?
1910 to 1915.
Which includes horses and carts.
Yeah, well, one of them is a building that's called the Tea Kiosk. It was at the end of Oriental Parade, 1910. And there's a picture of the tram in the foreground and people wandering along the footpath and the beach. And presumably people go there for their Sunday outing, and they're called into this tea kiosk, which is a rather large building, and had their afternoon tea. I remember that building in 1959. It had been converted into a public service boys' hostel, and I stayed there for about 6 months, and I didn't realise how flash I was staying in Oriental Bay, and I like to tell people now that I used to live in Oriental Bay.
So, in the time of the photo, it's about 1900, 1910, and at the time you were there, was it far out of Wellington, or is that the middle of Wellington, or because there's been lots of development since?
So it was about half an hour's walk from the centre of Wellington, Courtney Place, Courtney Place, about 20, 30 minutes.
And developed all the way along?
Yes.
Okay.
And there wasn't trams in those days, but there was a bus service that just went to Oriental Bay, turned around, went back into town.
So in that in the time in the photo, so you're talking about 120 years ago, was it out of town then, do you know?
Well, there's some houses in the background on the hill which suggest that it was a reasonably built-up area. The foreground is empty, but it was... When I was there too, that was a reserve, and there's a shed there that I think is a toilet.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, you see, somewhere like Wellington, you might have said, here's a nice spot, we'll have some, there's Wellington over there, we've got this outlying place, and people could sort of commute into Wellington.
I'd say it was probably, it would have been part of it.
Just the extension of Wellington,
it's within the Green Belt. Yeah. It's the
just around the corner is Evans Bay, so... these days you can certainly drive round Evans Bay up to the airport. I expect in those days there probably was a road there as well. In fact, I've got another photo that shows that there was a road there.
See, advanced planning, a road to the airport.
But it also, now there's a big, a tall hotel, multi-storey block. That's pretty much in the same location, isn't it?
Yeah, is that still there? I thought that had been erected and now demolished, and there was just apartments. Maybe the hotel has been converted into apartments.
Oh, right, because it is all apartments now along the lower part of that area, that street, the Oriental Parade. Sure. Expensive apartments, but there's still the big old houses, some of the beautiful old villas up there.
Yeah, well, I drove past it the other day, drove along there the other day, and the buildings that I recognise are... A shop that run down now that used to be a coffee shop that we went to, and the buildings are still there.
I had a flat just behind the Band Rotunda.
Oh.
But it was the old building, but it was just like a little cave. I'd go in, into the back, big concrete wall up behind, high rises each side, but I come out the door in the morning. Fabulous.
There's the sea right in front of you.
Yep.
So what were you doing down there, Mike? What took you down into there?
Radio broadcasting. I lived in Napier at the time, and I was interested in getting into radio broadcasting as a technician. But they didn't have any vacancies in Napier. So I was sent to Wellington and started off at 2ZB in Wellington. working with people like Aunt Daisy and
So you knew her, you met her, or
that was interesting because I was told to. First of all, I was told to turn up on a day in January, a Monday. So I was staying with my aunt and uncle at Johnsonville, and they said, "No, you can't turn up that day. That's Wellington's anniversary day." And I thought, well, I was told to turn up, but anyway, I didn't go in. The following day, I went in. Being conscientious, I went in early. I sat in the foyer. The receptionist hadn't come on. And a little old lady came up to me. I thought she was a little old at that stage. Came up to me in the foyer. I was sitting down, and she was standing up, and we're looking at each other eye to eye. She was that short. She asked if she could help, and I told her what I was, and she went away and got somebody to help me from there. So, yeah, I stayed there for 6 months. And
so that's your only contact with Aunt Daisy? Or you?
No, I worked with her as a technician. We had control rooms in those days, working with announcers through the glass. And Aunt Daisy would broadcast her session at 9 o'clock in the morning, and that would go out to the other ZB stations in the country and get rebroadcast. And she didn't like people looking at her through the glass window. So the technician, before she arrived, we had to pull the curtains across so nobody could see Aunt Daisy, which created a problem. Because one time she was talking, and all of a sudden it went very quiet, and we thought, what's going wrong? So we had a peek through the curtain, and she had got up from the microphone and gone to the other side of the studio to get something out of the handbag and then back. In another occasion, she said that the clock had stopped. Could a technician come and fix it? And we went in. What had happened was one of these clocks where the second hand goes, jumps around second by second. She must have glanced at it in between jumps and assumed the clock had stopped.
Yeah.
So, no, she was quite quaint.
So did you actually interact with her, have conversations with her? Nothing at all?
No, it was all advertising. What she did was complete advertising, and it was all paid for by advertisers, of course.
So it was all scripted for her?
No.
She'd just go, yep.
Yeah, and she didn't interview anybody. It was all, I don't know if there are still recordings of her sessions, but she'd do the whole half hour just by herself.
So why was I just say she's some sort of New Zealand institution, making up adverts about products and getting paid for it.
She was sitting there, I can remember hearing her, "Good morning, good morning, good morning, and the sun is shining right my back passage." And I was like, what? And then off she'd go, telling you about all sorts of wonderful things. But it was this bright, cheery little voice that would and this was up in Northland. And she had a book come out, Aunt Daisy's Cookbook. And these books were in most people's kitchens that I knew. I'm in a rural area. I imagine it was the same in the urban areas. So she was a celebrity. She was known.
I used the recipe out of that book to cure rabbit skin.
That's the sort of stuff that's in the book.
How to cure rabbit skin. And the instructions were how you had to fold it on itself, and you scraped it with this, and you put the salt on it.
And Daisy's Book of Handy Hints.
Yes.
Okay.
Did it have your mother's writing all through it? Yes.
And clips, she's about the sort of newspaper and put them in there.
They're almost like a sort of personal diary of food that was going in a particular household was eating, with marks and with where all the muck was sitting on the page, from the source.
Okay.
Gosh.
Anything familiar coming up there?
That's just handy hints. There was another book with
rabbits. Rabbit or lamb skins to cure. Dirty raincoat. How to clean your raincoat. Oil raincoat. How to shorten your raincoat. Rain spots. Rain spots on silk.
It's probably all you ever needed.
Dab with pure chloroform from the chemist.
I wonder how many of those she actually used herself.
She gathered them from places.
She may have had researchers.
People would have rung up and given her stuff too. Yes, so here we go, Dr. Scholl's arch supports.
No, I did hear, what was it? There was a famous cookbook in Britain where they said, well, actually the woman, she wasn't a good cook at all. She just cut out all these recipes from newspapers and things and put them into her cookbook.
Cookbook, I think that's about 400 years old. And at the front, it's food. At the back, it's home remedies.
Yeah.
So it's things like, take chicken droppings at midnight. Separate the white from the dark. Pound it up. Add X, Y, Z.
Throw it out.
Drink it. Drink it on a full moon. So you should get it out.
Ear of toad and leg of newt.
Incredible. So I think you either sink or swim.
Now, here we go. Chest troubles and coughs. How to make... And it's Irish moss. And what you do with it, how you use it. Oh, it's a wonderful book. How to mash potatoes.
How to mash potatoes. Uh-huh. Put them in a bowl, take your shoes and socks off, stand them to a pulp.
Okay, let me read it, because it's sensible. Potatoes are much more fluffy and whiter if mashed with hot milk instead of cold.
Absolutely.
And a pinch of baking powder added. My mother always did that.
This shows she doesn't use butter in the mashed potatoes?
Not there. But then remember, this is in the days of full cream milk. We didn't have any of that skim nonsense.
Yeah, yeah.
And chances are she would have skimmed the cream off the top.
Top of the milk. Top of the milk.
And also butter was rationed.
Ah.
Good point. Yeah. Mm. Oh, this earwigs. Squirt a mixture of creosote.
How to cook earwigs.
Well, that might be later. Squirt a mixture of creosote and ammonia in the cracks where they are. Creosote.
So you're just sealing them in, presumably.
Yeah.
Well, the ammonia would probably poison them. Fumes would be
picking
up the earth,
wouldn't
it?
Yeah. The same thing about that gets into wood.
Bora. I don't know, but I'll go there. But just before I go, egg economy. Grated carrot is a good substitute for eggs and boiled puddings.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah. Well, my mother used to preserve eggs because they were, again, they were expensive and rationed.
Yeah.
And she would put them in a kerosene...
A crock.
Well, in this case, it was a kerosene tin.
Right.
With the top cut off, and she put them in some sort of liquid that preserved the eggs.
I'm trying to remember what that liquid was called.
Yes.
Look up preserved eggs.
Yep, first, bora. Bora in furniture can be destroyed by painting with wood borrel from chemist. It does not stain. But even better, the one underneath, if you've got boot polish on an evening frock. First sponge, you should not have been cleaning your partner's shoes for stuff with your dress on. First sponge with alcohol or carbon something chloride. Can you read that?
Tetra,
okay. Yes, I should have glasses on. And then with warm, soapy water. Afterwards, rinse with clean water. So what was your one? Eggs, preserving eggs. I mean, it's... Oh, here's how to make custard. Oh, I love this book. Preserved eggs. In brackets, Auckland. So somebody has sent this in. When using preserved eggs, always break the shells nearer to the pointed end. The yolk is less likely to break. Before boiling preserved eggs, pierce one end with a fine needle.
Preserved eggs still have soft yolks?
Well, they're raw.
Oh, okay.
It's a liquid of something.
Yes, what was it?
The eggs are raw, but it keeps them. So
seal the pores of the shell.
So it just seals the shell.
Take eggs out of liquid preservative. And place on grass to dry.
You might have to Google what's it.
Wrap in paper, carry away any cracked ones, will carry well. No need to put them back in the liquid. The last one put in the liquid must have been there for 3 weeks. But there's nothing here about
how to.
Maybe they just all did it. It wasn't even.
Perhaps you just bought egg preserving liquid from the chemist.
It was some specific thing.
Yes,
though.
I know, but I can't remember.
Yeah. Some of them, I think you could also use a sort of a grease that you'd smear around the egg.
Yeah. But a bit like before freezers, preserving beans in salt.
Yeah.
Eggs can be preserved using various methods, including refrigeration, freezing, and dehydration.
Oh, aren't we so modern?
This is modern, yes. Mm. Water glassing eggs.
Water glass.
Water glassing. So it's what's water glass?
Water glass.
Haven't got a clue? Hey, I found a cure for hiccups. So. Sorry, carry on with water glassing.
I'm just trying to see if it says what. This is Homesteading Family, the web page.
Look at this. You owe it to yourself.
An electric washing machine.
I was the fourth child, and the deal was that when I was born, Mum got a washing machine. Uh-huh. She'd always just used the board.
Yeah.
And my sister still remembers the washing machine. But when I asked my...
You boiled, you lit the fire... underneath and boiled and put the blue bag.
The Ricketts blue bag.
Yes. No, my mother got a plug-in electric. Electric washing machine. Posh.
Bendix washing machine.
Is it Bendix?
Bendix washing machine after that.
I was in a hostel that had a laundry and it had concrete tubs. And I can't remember about a washing machine, but it had a copper.
Yes, it would be the copper.
Which never got used by the boys. But the manager sent the hostel committee a letter asking the boys to refrain from making their home brew in the copper.
Was it a good home brew?
The interesting thing is, all these processes had their own smell. And you can recall, if you think about it, you can recall that smell.
Just spots water max, water clay.
I could talk of a copper. I can remember a situation where a rental place had a lot of copper in it, and we lit the fire, and immediately heard this strange sound. And next thing, a flaming rat ran across the top, across the roof, and dived off the edge.
Okay, for water glassing eggs, you're using, well, it's water, but also hydrated lime, which is calcium hydroxide.
Sometimes called
pickling lime or slack lime. Not these days, but...
I've heard the term slack lime.
Slack lime.
It's too far back for me.
1 ounce of food-grade hydrated lime with 1 quart of cool water. Dissolve the lime in the water, then place the eggs in the container. And then pour the lime water solution over your eggs, submerging them completely. Cover the container... Label with the date and store in a cool, dark place for up to 18 months.
Ooh, that's a long time.
When ready to use, take the eggs out of the solution, rinse with water, and use as you would fresh eggs. Apparently, the taste and texture is slightly different, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's any worse.
I don't think I'd like an 18-month-old egg.
The longer they sit in the solution, then they'll be absorbing some of it, which affects taste slightly. However, to us, it's barely noticeable, it says on the webpage.
It's an interesting one. You know, you were saying about the food being in a safe. I was doing New Zealand history at some stage, and the lecturer or the tutor was saying, you know, what made the biggest impact for the housewife in New Zealand, sort of around the 40s. And I thought, I'll go and ask one. So I asked my mother. Without a pause, she just went, the fridge. Yeah. I could leave home. It meant she could put stuff in the fridge, shut the door, and she knew there was food for a meal when she got home, and it was okay.
Yes.
And it was the revolutionary one, was the fridge. Not all the fancy oven, washing machine, all of that. It was the fridge. Gave them freedom. Mm.
Coming back to laundry, do you remember blue bags?
Oh, yes. And for bee stings.
Blue whitening, yeah. Yeah. Blue because it makes things...
And you push it in the water and then the sheets come out all white. And then the horse knocks down the clothesline pole. Thank you, stepping to my grandmother. That was her story. Mm.
What are you laughing at?
What have you found?
Well, isn't it a actually, treat? It does have home remedies, this too. And it says, cut, severe. If the blood flows in spurts, you have cut an artery.
Call the undertaker.
Bind it tightly between the wound and the heart.
Anywhere between the wound and the heart? In other words, apply a tourniquet.
Yeah.
Wow. Yes.
But it doesn't say if you live.
Yeah. Well, you think of some of the cuts they would have had with the machinery they were using.
Obviously,
you cut it 10 or 40 on you. Well, I've heard of a woman with long hair getting a cord in a row.
Oh, I knew. Mm. And in the separator in the cow shed.
Okay.
And one woman at home did, and her whole scalp was just ripped off. And so from then on she wore a wig. And it was, we were not allowed anywhere around that piece of machinery. Yes. After
that's
that.
Why my parents wouldn't have a ringer.
The ringer, and the other one was kids' hands going in. And then they had a release thing.
That's right.
But before that, it was fixed. Yeah. It was just a...
Well, these days, if something needs fixing, throw it away and get a new one.
I know.
Cheaper than call the trades one sometimes.
Mm. Yeah.
Has anybody got anything they'd like to fix? Yeah.
Someone was saying a call out charge into the country was $90.
Oh, currently.
Yeah.
What's that for?
Any.
So that's before they even arrive.
Yes.
Yeah.
I had my chimney swept. All he did was go up on the roof, go ch-ch-ch, because it was actually okay. It was all done in about 10 minutes.
Mm.
$143.
Yeah, well, they've got to pay for running costs for their vehicles.
Mm.
Yeah, I think it's about $90 for just to come.
Mm. Yeah, if you're, about 20k out of town?
Some firms in Palmerston North will charge a delivery fee to fuel it, some won't. So you've got to be careful when you get something like a fridge or whatever, how much it's going to cost.
Some charge delivery fee even within Palmerston North. Yeah. More now than before.
Particularly if you have to have, recently got a new washing machine and you have to have
bring it in, connect it. Do they take away the old one as well?
Yes, they do.
I'd pay for that.
Yeah, I did.
I'd pay for that. Very happily. Yeah.
But I think some companies now, instead of doing their own delivery, they use other companies to do that. So you add on the cost.
This is a list of don'ts for mothers. It includes, don't let young children attend the cinema. This is from...
They should watch on their cell phones.
Charge Nurse Plunkett Society. Don't let baby suck his thumb. There's no hers in
this.
Yeah. She's allowed to suck your thumb.
Was that the generic his for his and hers? Which would have been understood that way.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Don't make him walk and talk. How could you make someone walk and talk anyway?
Well, don't ask questions while they're walking, you see. Yeah.
Don't forget that only selfish parents have spoilt children.
Ooh.
That's not selfish, is it? If you're spoiling the child.
And this one, don't let your child play inside when the sun is shining.
Don't worry about melanoma. Just kick it outside. Right. Sun shining out you go.
No, it was
for you lot growing up in New Zealand, you just spent all the time outside?
Yes.
No sun protection at all?
What are your kids doing inside? Get outside. Go and do something.
Lumps and bumps.
And if you got sunburn, you bragged about it. So, look at the sunburn I got yesterday.
It was a different attitude to sun. And yet, I know my grandmother would have been saying, put a hat on. Their generation was more aware of.
I think we had hats very early. Mm-hmm.
Now, I did see, in fact, because, our grandparents' generation, they'd all wear hats all the time. And there was a YouTube thing about why don't people wear hats now? And apparently it's because of cars. Because before cars, people would be out in the open a lot more. And with cars, though, you're getting in and out of the car. And hats will be a nuisance with that. So you're not in the sun as much, and it's inconvenient, especially if you have top hats and things getting in and out. You'd need specially designed cars that had room for the top hat, so which wouldn't work. So there was a big move away from that.
That's probably why I got a sunroof in my car.
Oh, it's because it's in the meantime. But that's another thing. When you look at what are small cars now, and I remember the size of the family cars we had when I was young, and the small cars today are bigger than those family cars.
Oh, definitely. Well, you put put any car beside an old Mini, for instance.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it's like, no, these modern small cars, mine is supposed to be it's a Swift, it's supposed to be a small car. No, not beside a Mini. Wow. An old Mini puts it right back into...
Yeah. And also the design now, you've got so much more space inside the car, even for the same overall size of the
car. Because the motor's much smaller too, isn't it?
Yeah, but also design, because you'd have a boot at the back, and now it's still spreading.
My first vehicle was a 1929 Studebaker.
Oh.
And the hostel I was living in, the manager there had a V-dub combi van which had to go in for servicing, so he needed a vehicle in the meantime, so he bought this 1929 Studebaker. When he got his van back, he didn't need the Studebaker anymore. He said to me, do I want it? I'll sell it to you for £15. So I bought the thing. It was a terrible thing to drive, double declutching and all this sort of thing, absolutely terrible. And the brake pedal, I think, was in the middle of three pedals, and I used to take it into Wellington occasionally, and I'd always park it on the terrace where I could let the handbrake off and do a rolling start. And if I took my girlfriend to the movies, then again, park the car on the terrace, climb back up to the terrace after the movie, hop and roll the car down the hill to start it, drive her out to her home in the Hutt Valley, drive back to where I lived. But then one day, I tried this, and bang, the axle broke. So that was the end of the 1929 Studebaker. I had it towed away, and then it ended up in the wreckers, sort of dumped at the dump or something. But yeah, I've still got papers to that for that 1929 Studebaker.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.